I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Give it to me!
Hey everyone, I'm Molly Wood.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
Welcome to It's a Thing, the weekly podcast supported by you, where we are more than things. Mm. They're an invitation to catch up with friends. Aww. So get to the good stuff. Thanks for joining us.
I really like that. I wish it was, in fact, our mission statement. It's catching up with friends, getting to the good stuff.
Some occasional tense or pronoun changes. What am I looking for? It's like we're more than things there. And
pronoun change. Yeah.
Pronoun changes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, but like I wouldn't actually even put that past the real brands. That might not even be us, but I do wish they hadn't trademarked get to the good stuff.
Yeah, it was a bit of a giveaway when you see the TM in the text.
Simultaneously a trigger and a bummer because it's such a good tagline. But in this case, we're talking about the always delicious Tostitos.
I think it's safe to say, are the Tostitos of podcasting.
We are the Tostitos of podcasting. We just come in multiple delicious incarnations. We are simultaneously bite size and hint of lime with the occasional spicy pumpkin.
We go with so many things.
We do.
And yeah, we're free with dinner sometimes.
I should have brought some up here because we can't crack into it.
Actually, yeah, that sounds pretty good. I'm going to run out and grab some.
I know I'm not like, I want some chips.
I mean, when I say Tostitos, I mean Casa Sanchez, but you know, whatever.
I mean, I do too. Yeah, except around the Super Bowl when I buy the little scoopy shaped ones.
Ooh, the scoops.
Those are the ish.
Or if you're in Texas, get the Texas shaped tortilla chips, especially if you have friends visiting from outside the state. Really, they make them go crazy when they see the Texas. Yeah.
Adorable.
Well, I know someone who loves to just munch down on bags and bags of Tostitos, and that is Bears.
I'm so happy both about that segue and this choice, because yes and yes.
So I implore you to go look up the actual facts of Fat Bear Week in Alaska. It's been going on since 2014. It is meant to promote the national park and awareness about bears and get people interested in nature. It started just as kind of a fun, like, which of these two bears that's ready to hibernate is fattest, that rangers put up after they took pictures of the bears. And over the years has become more complicated, has gone to become a whole week. It used to be Fat Bear Tuesday when it first launched.
Oh, really?
Which I think is delightful.
It has expanded like a bear's waist.
It has. And yet I was stunned this week when I woke up in the morning, saw it on Hacker News, Reddit, The Economist podcast, and the front page of the BBC. So I did a little Google search. And if you search for news about Fat Bear Week today, Friday, October 7th, you'll get recent stories from the New York Times, Fox News, The Guardian, obviously the Anchorage Daily News, Mashable, The Weather Channel, CNN. I don't know who handled press for Fat Bear Week, but the thing isn't just Fat Bear Week. The thing is the massive media uptake of Fat Bear Week.
It's actually the thingness of Fat Bear Week is the thing.
Yes, exactly.
That's amazing.
It's a total meta thing.
It's actually, I mean, that's pretty incredible because Fat Bear Week, you're so right. Like, Fat Bear Week was a big deal last year. I remember, like, last year or maybe the year before is sort of when I became aware of it. And I was like, oh, this is so cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess I just assumed that it was because it was already in my feed.
Mm-hmm.
That I was seeing
that it was like an algorithm.
Realizing, like, no, I'm seeing it everywhere.
I mean the way it proceeded for me, because same thing. I'm like, oh yeah, I heard about this. Oh, this is, it's back. Oh, that's cute. When I saw it, I think I saw it on Hacker News in my RSS feed first. I'm like, oh, Fat Bear Week. Of course, somebody on Hacker News talking about Fat Bear Week. You know, that's great. Then I saw it on the BBC front page. I'm like, oh wow, even the BBC picking up Fat Bear Week and slapping it right there up in front of everyone. Then I'm listening to the Economist podcast, The Intelligence, their daily podcast, which, if you don't know, only does three stories every day to try to explain to you what's most important in the world. And one of their three segments was Fat Bear Week.
Stop it.
And they had an interview with the Rangers. So it was not like spur of the moment. They'd set it up.
Yeah. Wow. That's bonkers. All right, fine. We just, you know what? We just need it. Is the thing.
I think you're it. I think you're right. I think it, everyone looked at it and was like, oh man, this story doesn't tie into anything else that we are talking about right now, which is such a relief. It's like, just bears.
I'm like pretty sure like somebody's out there buzzkilling it, but it's pretty tough.
It is.
Like nice people in Alaska and bears.
And rangers and not-for-profit. Right. Other than maybe like bringing in some support for the park or preservation or something, but yeah, it's not a marketing gimmick. No. Yeah, amazing.
It's just purely delightful. Oh, I'm so happy. That's lovely. I do. I like it when they do the baby bears. That's the cutest.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so happy they're doing that. Well, I have been noticing this everywhere because, like, once upon a time, I had a really great denim shirt, and I think I might have gotten rid of the denim shirt. I don't really know, but now I'm super irritated because I was like, God, denim shirts are really back. But then what I realized is it's not just that denim shirts are really back. Mm-hmm. It's that denim on denim is 100% back. Denim shirts with jeans, which went through this like wave in the 80s and 90s, right? Where it was like, this looks really cool. And then it was like, oh my God, how embarrassing. You're actually wearing denim with your denim.
Canadian tuxedo.
Totally. And then it came right back around again. And then for fall, it is on. And previously on the show, and we were talking about this in the pre-show or the bonus content for those of you who subscribe to the Patreon. We were like, wait, did we already do this? And no, but close, because what we talked about on the show was denim jackets being totally back.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. And, okay. Yeah.
And they are, and they remain back. And so your denim on denim trend can include a really cool denim shirt, which is what I'm seeing a lot, or your denim jacket with your jeans and like a really cool white shirt, which is always also a win.
I'm so excited by this. I'm so pleased by this. I'm so glad that you brought this to the show because it was, I think, 2015. When I was doing a shoot for Microsoft and AOL up in Seattle, and I had a denim chambray shirt and jeans on, and the producer said, oh, I'm sorry, Tom, you'll have to change that shirt. That's a Canadian tuxedo. She was very nice about it. I'm not mad at her, but I look at this and I'm like, I was just too early. That shoot had been 7 years later, and it would have been like, amazing. You're so on trend.
Seriously. You would have been like the Kanye of the, well, maybe that's not right.
Blue denim matters.
Maybe not that. Exactly. By the way, I think this is where we just acknowledge that yay is never not going to be a thing.
Yeah, right. Yep.
We can't stop down for every single
right twist and turn. Just take it as given at the top of this problem that we're solving.
But I have seen him in a big oversized denim jacket with big oversized jeans. Yeah. And it looked really cool.
There you go. Easy.
Yep. God, Canadian tuxedo is incredible though. I might steal that.
Oh yeah. No, that's a thing. That's a thing of its own. So yeah, for sure.
That's take magical. That. Well, take that when I am wearing my cool denim on denim outfit, I'm going to be like,
oh, you're right. So right though. Denim, denim is back, and the denim on denim is like double back.
Double back. Double back, babies. And I'm here for it. I love it.
Have you heard of frogging? P-H-R-O-G-G-I-N-G.
So, no.
I was introduced to this by one Len Peralta. Ah! What happened?
Well, God, I clicked the link and then there's a scary picture on there.
Ah, yes. Len Peralta introduced me to the Lifetime show Frogging Hider in My House. And at the same time to the term frogging, which means to hide and live in someone's house without their knowledge.
And I'm sorry, you're trying to tell me this is a thing?
It is a thing.
I don't want this to be a thing.
In fact, if you go on YouTube, you can find lots of people documenting this where it's not squatting because people are living in the house, but maybe there's an attic or Al on Daily Tech News Show suggested it might come from front room over garage. Like an extra room if nobody's living in it. Somebody could sneak in and live in the front room over the garage and without your knowledge. But it's like it's a whole skill. And so there's lots of tales out there of people who just are sneaky and are like, you know, they just wait till everybody leaves to go to work that day. And then they come down and, you know, do whatever, go to the bathroom, maybe take a shower real quick, maybe steal some food. And then when they hear people coming back, they sneak back up into the attic or wherever they're hiding and then just stay there and can persist for a long time without anyone knowing they're there if they're quiet. The Lifetime series is more about the people who are like criminals doing more malicious stuff.
Right. But this is just like, yeah, you just live in there. Apparently, I looked this up, and on an Australian website, they say one of the most high profile examples of this was when singer George Michael found a stalker who had been living under his floorboards for 4 days in 2012.
4 days.
4 days. This is basically the, you know, I mean, everybody here has seen Parasite already, right?
Right. Yes. Yes.
Best known example.
Right. I think if we just say there's an example of that in the movie, I don't think that's too spoilery.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is like one of those you don't need to know about it, but now we do know about it. And there is indeed enough supporting material that maybe hopefully not the act itself.
I imagine the incidents of this are still fairly rare. The fact that they occur at all is what's stunning.
Exactly. And that there are enough stories to make a show.
Yeah. You know, at least a 12 episode run, right? Or whatever.
Wow.
Whenever they got their 8.
Okay, well, I'm just going to make a hard turn into happier trend.
Yeah, please do.
Because now I'm terrified. Okay, usually the internet is a bad influence in some ways, but there is an absolutely amazing thing making its way around the TikToks right now called Academic Weapon.
Okay.
So there's this big, huge guy on TikTok named Brad Kraut.
Okay. Picturing him. Yeah.
Brad Kraut. Brad Kraut has like a big old beard and he is ripped. Like he is a big guy, big chest, big arms, big buff guy. And his whole deal is that he has been trying to turn being an academic weapon into a trend, aka being an academic overachiever. He's like, fuck the trend of saying that it's not cool to care about school. He's in college and he has all these videos with this like really fired up energy, and he's made it super popular to go and sit in the front row of these like huge college lecture halls and be like super, super plugged in to class and becoming an academic weapon.
So he's the opposite of too cool for school.
Yes.
That's amazing.
He is the aggressively opposite of too cool for school. He's like, no, school is sick. And you're going to be an academic weapon. And so now there are all these TikTok videos of kids with like many, many screens open and lots of homework in front of them. And like, they'll be doing like a bunch of math with rock music in the background. And they'll be like, academic fucking weapon.
Wow.
It is amazing.
Of course, all the students in Korea and Japan are just shaking their head and like, oh man, we've been doing that for decades.
Exactly. They're like, yeah, our entire culture is academic weapon. Yeah. Welcome.
Yeah, but making it cool, this is making it American, right? Yeah. Like it needs to be kind of like over the top and like you're taking it on. You'll prove them wrong. Be an academic weapon. Sit in the front row. Front row is the coolest. That's amazing. Oh, my gosh.
It's incredible. And he's apparently been at this for a while. Like somebody wrote him up. Somebody wrote up another. Well, Brett Crowd, I think, is the one who really popularized it. The term has existed. Like if you look it up, I found like an article from like 2021.
Okay. Okay. So he didn't coin the phrase. He just empowered it.
Right. Exactly. And made it like it's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You can find academic weapon from 2016 in Urban Dictionary. And it just is literally like, you know, somebody, typically a student who is scholarly.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tyler's an academic weapon. He managed to take 4 AP courses while still being on honor roll every semester. But previously that might not have been like written up in, what is this site that I looked up?
TotalFratMove.com.
Exactly. So the fact that it is now a total frat move,
yeah,
to go be an academic weapon is pretty much all because of this guy and his like one video, and it's amazing.
I can see this having been kind of a backhanded compliment, like, man, right. That guy's an academic weapon. Like he may be boring as hell, you know, and no fun to hang around with, but he's an academic weapon. Whereas Brad Kraut has turned it into like, no, you want to be an academic weapon. It is the most interesting man in the room being an academic weapon.
Can you smell what the academic weapon is cooking?
Fire this academic weapon right now.
Seriously.
Don't terminate. Like, I don't want to lose my, never mind.
Right. Like academic ballistic missile.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's pretty, I hope it sticks around because it is damn delightful. And on TotalFratMove.com, the author says that he has not been able to go to a single class without encountering somebody talking about it and without encountering specifically people getting like to these big lectures 15 minutes early so they can sit in the front row.
Academic weapon.
Let's go, America. Let's reclaim academic weapon.
Do you think you'll be successful in converting your child into an academic weapon?
Oh, he's super into it. Yeah.
Good. That's great. Been,
like, working out and trying to do his homework all the time to be an academic weapon.
Academic weapon.
I love Brad. Love you, Brad Kraut.
Oh, thank you, Brad Kraut. You are a national treasure. Let's get to our things from you in the audience feedback at itsathing.me, starting with Lee Price on an internet culture thing and requesting a thing check. Molly, are you available for a thing check?
I'm ready. I can do this.
Your recent episode discussing Adam Levine's meme-generating life decisions and Tom and Rich's relative lack of knowledge of the situation reminds me of a growing feeling I've had as this year progresses. In the past, I felt like there was an internet monoculture. Most of us would be aware of big memes and events bubbling up from internet subcultures. Increasingly, it feels like there's too much internet. Enough that no one person can possibly stay on top of internet culture. Probably neither good nor bad. I guess our internet subcultures are perhaps evolving into something bigger that demand more of our attention. Oh, the hilarious recent developments I wish it could share from online LGBT culture that are far too NSFW for this show. So, thing check, is this phenomenon of internet culture overwhelm and splintering real? And what do we call it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think two things are true at the same time. One, absolutely. And it's sort of this phenomenon that we've been vaguely referring to as the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Like your algorithm, right?
Yep.
Like what is ties your right algorithm into that. Giving you? It ties right into that, which is definitely a thing that each of us lives in our own little bubble of our tailored feeds.
Mm-hmm.
But also some things rise above. Like Tom and Rich didn't know about Adam Levine last week.
Oh, but we definitely knew about it, even if you had not told us about it that day. Yeah,
exactly.
For sure. Like, yeah.
Some things still thing it up. Otherwise, without those things, we would not, in fact, have a show. I mean, sometimes Tom will bring something or I'll bring something and we won't have seen it because it'll be in our algorithm for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting. Like, I don't know. We ignore the science. We're like Stephen Hawking, how when he talks about the Big Bang Theory and, you know, there's this fundamental question of like, what was there before time? Then there, all these physicists are just like, yeah, that's for God to figure out. Or wait, we're just ignoring that.
And we're God?
So we're Stephen Hawking
here. Oh, we are right.
Identifying
right.
The things and yes. the beginning of time in which the things occur.
One of the many ways we are like Stephen Hawking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we are leaving aside the fundamental question of how did the things cross over?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's absolutely right. I think you nailed it. But I think another thing that feeds into that is the fact that everyone is on the internet, and Lee Price, you and I and Molly and Rich, we go back to the internet that was still 50%, right?
Yeah.
And so first of all, fewer people to have to get a meme to go up to, and more possible to have memes that are everyone, or, you know, a large majority of people. Whereas now, internet subcultures are in some ways just subcultures.
Right.
Right.
Which always existed.
Yeah. They've just moved onto the internet with the rest of us.
Right. So they're like, always would have been cool stuff happening.
Yeah.
In bar based LGBT culture.
Mm-hmm.
That sure. I wouldn't maybe have known about.
Yeah.
You know, as an example from Lee Price's. But I think it is becoming, I guess it depends on you and your internet and your usage. You could probably live in your algorithm forever. But I do think there still are, I think there was always both. There were always bulletin boards, and there was always, you know.
There was always mass culture.
The homepage.
And there's there's always subcultures, and it's just the shift in them is different. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that internet was a subculture, but it is not a subculture anymore.
Oh, maybe.
It is either mass culture, right, when the meme breaks out like Adam Levine, or it's individual subcultures.
Yeah. Hard to say.
Yeah.
Hard to say. But Lee Price, I think were we the type of show to produce like a thesis or a think piece,
mm-hmm.
or something, we would probably be diving into this idea of the algorithm, your algorithm,
yep,
and the larger culture. You know who is this type is Rich. Just saying.
He's which type?
He's the type to produce like.
Oh, you mean the type to make the think piece? Yes. Yeah. You're assigning Rich the think piece.
I'm not assigning it to him at all. I'm just saying.
No, you're totally assigning Rich the think piece, and he's halfway through writing it already, I suspect.
He already wrote it.
Yeah. It's probably done by now.
Yeah. We don't realize it's the show notes.
The show notes are actually just one long doctoral thesis.
We think we're doing a podcast, but we're doing Rich's doctoral thesis. That's what we're doing. All right. Patty, or Patty, I'm going to say Patty, wrote in with a trio of things. Ooh, hello nice. There, MTR. I've been trying to write this email for weeks now, waiting for a nice witty idea to hit. But to be honest, I think these things themselves are all of that and more. Number one, yeah, pickleball. It's a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. it's like the biggest thing.
It's just getting bigger.
It really is. It's crazy. Apparently, according to Patty, the Los Angeles Magazine ran an article about very rich people complaining about the noise coming from the adjacent sports club in Montecito. While tennis clubs are divided on what to do with the increased interest in this sport that mixes ping pong and tennis and pisses off everyone who's not into it. I thought it was an LA kind of issue until I got an email from Mark and Graham, an online store that sells preppy accessories with monograms on them, offering a whole collection of gifts for the pickleballer in your life.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. Yep. Yeah. We've been tracking pickleball for a while in this here show. And it, I didn't even associate it with LA in the beginning, but
no,
I love this idea that someday
I thought it started here.
People will look back at LA Magazine and think, oh, how quaint that the old fashioned types were worried about pickleball taking over the tennis clubs. And now we live in a world where tennis is sometimes still played at the pickleball club.
It's an artisanal throwback. How embarrassing. You played tennis. It'll be like, you know what pickleball is? It's this generation's snowboarding.
Like, not bad.
Snowboarding came along and like, no one's gonna do that. That's just for like these little
Olympic so pickleball irritating.
And we hate the snowboarders on the slopes
because so gauche.
Mm-hmm. And then it just took right over. Two, Patty writes, pompous grass as decoration. I wish I had thought of this because I freaking bought some.
What?
Yes, I have faux pompous grass decoration in a Tiffany vase in my house downstairs.
Oh, no. I have it. Pompous grass growing in my front yard. Two huge bushes.
Didn't know that it had a name and that it was a thing. but apparently it is. These feathery looking branches are everywhere right now, can confirm. And although you can find them more or less for cheap online, they are kind of expensive in nurseries, floral shops, and furniture stores, at least in the LA area. It's kind of the epitome of the Japandi cabin, minimalistic, chic, clean girl aesthetic. With, I will add, if I may editorialize, a dash of coastal grandmother.
Yep, 100%. And you can pick them up for free off my lawn sometimes because they just break off. In fact, I'm going to be trimming the pompous grass because they get real big. They get out of hand. So maybe I should be like harvesting them and being like, maybe, let's sell these off. Roadside pompous grass.
Yeah. Dude, if you went out, you could sell them, or you could just get on your Buy Nothing and be incredible.
Yeah, actually, I probably should just put them in a box and go on Buy Nothing and be like, here you go, pompous grass, enjoy.
Seriously. And then finally, number three, sponsored weddings. Since so many celebrities started getting married with promotional gifts from brands, from Priyanka Chopra and one of the Jonas Brothers to Kourtney Kardashian and the Barker guy. I love her style. Many influencers have been tagging brands and asking for sponsorships for their wedding. Even Town and Country magazine ran an article about it saying it's a big business for both the brands and fashion influencers. Glamour Mag also wonders how this became a thing for the rich and famous and how the regular people of the world are making it a thing for them too. Incredible. I did not know that one.
That, I feel like, comes out of influence culture where we are getting used to the idea of sponsorships in a way that is anathema to our generation and older. Whereas younger generations are like, yeah, just as long as you're transparent about it, it's fine.
Right.
Whereas the idea of sponsoring a wedding, how awful that must be for pickleball players, is now just becoming a like, heck yeah, if I can get my wedding paid for, I'm sure. Why not?
It actually, you're right. Like influencer culture. God, we're producing a lot of academic theses.
I know.
But influencer culture really has produced a whole culture of gimme stuff.
Right. Free. And the sponsorship aspect is not, when I was growing up, the whole thing with sponsors was you're a sellout because you don't care about the message anymore. You're just getting paid. Right. Mm-hmm. And so the examples were always like, a singer who changes his lyrics to be about Kraft cheese because he sold out to Kraft cheese. And it was ridiculous because the song was, you know, originally a protest song about the Vietnam War, but now it's about Kraft cheese. And that is ridiculous. But what the current culture is like, well, no, I choose sponsors carefully. I wouldn't choose a sponsor that conflicts with my personal brand. Right. It's obvious. Like,
or
why?
I am just gauche and that is my personal brand.
If your personal brand, but see, it fits the personal brand, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So it you pick, people curate their sponsors. It's crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Scott Hamilton on a hair resurgence can confirm that mullets are back. Scott writes, I saw two 20-something guys, both within 3 minutes, with honest-to-goodness 1980s-era mullets, the kind with the shaved sides. One of them had short shorts and a front fanny pack, and the other had an 80s thin mustache. Have mercy on me, Scott. Are you sure they weren't going to an 80s themed party or something? Although shaving the sides, that's committing to the bit.
That's committing to the bit.
Yeah.
Wow. It is really happening. Damn. Also, by the way, I'd like to offer up Rich's title for his think piece. The societal impacts of influencer culture from monetization to expectations.
Oh, please. Can Molly and I be authors on
please,
this?
Please. Can you? Please?
Yeah.
At least citations.
Did I tell you I'm going to be a co-author on an academic paper, possibly?
No.
Yeah. I was on a COVID panel about the effects of contact tracing. And if it gets turned into a paper, I will have an academic citation.
Oh, my biscuits. That's amazing.
I'm very excited about this.
Yeah. That's like right up your alley. Of course you are.
I know.
That's amazing.
I'll have it framed. Buy the journal.
Let it be. I love it. Well, this show would not be without all of you supporting us at patreon.com/itsathing, especially those incredible, brave, intrepid souls who support us at the shout out level. And therefore, week after week are either treated or subjected to custom crafted shout outs.
Handmade. Brain forged.
With no small amount of digging and extreme creativity. For example, this week's shoutouts are based on the intro in the manual for Zork 2.
Three.
I can't read Roman numerals. Zork 3.
That was one of the most impressive parts. Not Zork 2. Nope. Zork 3.
Zork 3, the Dungeon Master. By the way, the main character is the same adventurer from Zork and Zork 2.
Obviously, of course.
It's a game made by Infocom, which is incredible. You're a nameless adventurer traveling around, cast into a deep dungeon in Zork 3. And like in a dream, you hear a mysterious voice telling you that you have passed all the tests but one. To support us at the shout out level. Hey-o!
Hey, side quest. Do you know about character AI? Character.ai?
No.
So it's one of those smart text generators that all you do is describe the character in a like mini bio, and then it will let you converse with it. So it'll create a character, and somebody created a text adventure game character on there, and it's brilliant. It's the best text adventure ever because it works, and you can throw stuff at it. Like, you know, I was playing and it was like, you're now surrounded by ninjas with swords. And I was like, talk to them about nonviolence. And it responded with, you make an impassioned plea for peace. And the ninjas hear your words and lay down their swords. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing.
That is insane. AI creation will be the story of the rest of the decade. It is bananas.
Yeah, it really is. But we are fairly certain that none of our patrons are algorithms. And so we are happy to serve our human masters in this case with the following shout outs. I'll kick us off. Here we go.
All right.
Welcome to Kevin Sill. You are about to experience a classic interactive fantasy set in a magical universe. The Morris Jones trilogy takes place in the ruins of an ancient Benjamin forest lying far underground. Lee Price, a dauntless treasure hunter, is venturing into this dangerous land in search of Eric Duncan and Mike Akins. Because each part of the Gabriel Cohen saga is a complete independent story, Jake Woods can explore them in any order.
As Lara Abel begins, Andrew Bradley's greatest challenge beckons as Joe Hood takes the final step down into the very heart of the great underground James C. Smith. Your character and courage will be tested as the enigmatic Miranda Janelle confronts you with predicaments and perils. Your quest hinges upon discovering Louis St. Amour's secret purpose, even as he oversees your ultimate triumph or destruction.
I know I say this every time. This is one of the best ones yet.
I know, it really is. It's beautiful. It's so fun and exciting. It makes me want to play video games.
It could be you next.
It could be you. I don't know that we've added a new patron to the shout out tier for a while. So Patreon. I challenge one of you out there. Patreon.com/it's a thing. Get in here. Get to the good stuff.
Yes, the Tostitos of podcasting. Oh, our email address is feedback@itsathing.me.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Give it to me. Give it to me.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.